Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Soccer is exploding in popularity, and in Charlotte, we are exploding with teams. In fact, a new team in a new league just began play here to sell out crowds and a win. That's unusual for Charlotte. On top of that, it is Charlotte's first top-tier professional women's soccer team, one of eight teams playing in the new United Soccer League Super League, USL Super League. We thought it would be a good idea to take a closer look at this new team, the new league, women's soccer, and the growth of women's sports as well. So we invited Jan Ivey to be with us. She is Senior Vice President of Organizational Advancement for this new team, Carolina Ascent FC. Also with us is Ashley Mahoney, reporter for Axios Charlotte, who covers soccer extensively and is one of our go-to soccer people on this program. And Eric Spanberg, our go-to guy for everything. Managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal is back with us. Good morning. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. So, Jan, let me start with you. How did this team, Carolina Ascent FC, come to be, and how did it come to be in Charlotte?
So, about two years ago, actually, the USL, which is the brother to the USL Super League, they came to our ownership group and talked to the owners throughout the USL and asked them about their interest in expansion and their interest in going into women's professional soccer sport. Our ownership was obviously very interested, embracing of the thought, thought it was the right time to start investigating this, especially since Charlotte has had a drought of professional women's sports since the WNBA left in 2007. So it is was the right time for Charlotte, but it, you know, a lot of people think that August 17th, when we had our inaugural game, that it was just an accident and it just popped up and then we were just suddenly successful. But it's actually been about a two-year process in developing team name, team colors, the jersey, working with focus groups, working with Charlotte soccer fans. There's been a lot of research done as far as, you know, what the team should look like, both on the field and off the field. And so it's been a couple of years in coming, but as I mentioned, August 17th was our inaugural home game.
And it was a 1-0 victory over the D.C. Power Football Club. And more to the point, you sold out Memorial Stadium, which I think you sold 10,533 tickets, if I'm not mistaken. At least that's how many people were there. Whether they were there on freebies, I don't know. But I was going to ask if that surprised even the team. But then I read that the team ownership promised a strong turnout. Why the confidence in that?
I think it has to do with the dedication and the focus that we have been really driving in it. You know, it comes from the top down, right? You can't bubble that up from the bottom. Dan D'Amico and Jim McPhillamy, who are our primary owner and our managing partner owner, they have from the very beginning, they have been very determined for a successful product. They demand it from themselves and they demand it from everyone else. So I think it was just walking into a situation where we are going to be successful. We have to put our eyes on success. And success looks, you know, success looks a little different because it is a success that is to be on the pitch as well as off the pitch. And I do think that's something a little unique for Charlotte sports. As they are looking at the development of the team. It's not just about sponsorship and tickets. It's also about community partnerships and the impact of this team on the community and to especially to young female soccer fans.
Eric, she just mentioned Dan D'Amico and Jim DeFilamy, we've had one or both of those gentlemen on the program because their names are very familiar to soccer fans because they own the other, well, one of the other soccer teams in Charlotte. The name is escaping me. I don't know why.
The Independents. The
Thank
Charlotte
you very much. Yes. Jeez. And they share Memorial Stadium with the Ascent. They haven't made the inroads in Charlotte that perhaps they had hoped. So why take on another soccer team?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. Now, they, with the Independents, which is a lower tier professional team as compared to Major League Soccer, which is what Charlotte FC is, the team owned by David Tepper, the Independents have been knocked around in various ways. They didn't have a permanent stadium for a long time. Then the MLS team arrives and they take a lot of the oxygen out of the room. So that may be an entirely separate show. But what's interesting is that Dan D'Amico and Jim McPhillamy did see the opportunity to bring in women's soccer and to invest in it. And as Jan just outlined, it's done so well. And I think what's also interesting is that, you know, with all the soccer going around Charlotte, we have international matches, we have MLS, we have USL. It just shows the power and strength of women's sports. This is such a moment for women's sports. And you look across the landscape, whether it's here with the Ally tip-off, bringing in Caitlin Clark and women's college basketball, you look across the country, women's sports is just having a moment. And it does not show any signs of, you know, getting stuck in neutral or going backwards. It's all forward in terms of interest, viewership, revenue. And so I think the Ascent arrived at the right time.
So Ashley, in this inaugural season for the Ascent, it's the inaugural season of seven other teams, if I'm not mistaken about that, in the USL Super League. How are they different? Because it's all female players. How are they different from the National Women's Soccer League?
Well, I think the biggest thing that you'll see is the structure of the calendar. So, for instance, if you look at the Independents or NWSL or even Charlotte FC, you have more of a, I guess you could say, a quote-unquote American style, where it's more that early part of the season through the summer ends in the fall. But if you look at the international game, that starts in August. So if you're a Premier League fan, La Liga, you name it, you have more of a perspective of this runs from end of summer, early fall to spring of the following year. So there'll be a fall season for the Ascent and all of the their other fellow teams in this brand new league. And then you'll have the spring season. So you have just a different structure. So they work almost in harmony with one another rather than competing against one another. And NWSL has been successful to a degree. It's had the, you know, most success of any women's soccer league to date in the country. It's still around. Success just by still being here is one thing. But at the same time, it's been mired in controversy, you know, just up the road with the North Carolina Courage. You know, you had a head coach who was forced to resign because of allegations of sexual coercion of players. So there's certainly been no lack of controversy, whether it's been from the coaching standpoint, from a lack of adequate facilities. It's still finding its footing, and hopefully USL Super League doesn't run into the same scandals and hurdles.
So Jan, is this professional women's soccer team here in Charlotte because this new league, the USL Super League, saw something in this area that they thought would help them build the league, or is it here because the ownership team from the Charlotte Independents wanted to expand their empire?
I think all of the above. I think you checked a lot of the boxes. I think the USL Super League, I think they look at the 217 people that move here a day. They look at Charlotte as a financial center powerhouse of the United States. I think they look at it as a city that has numerous Fortune 500 companies, 100 companies, 1,000 companies. I think they look at it from the business side of it first. Because without the business, you know, the business and the fans kind of come hand in hand. You have to have enough people to come to the games because Charlotte has a lot of, you know, a lot of entertainment options now that they did not have, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. So I think they have to look at the growth of the city in order to do that. I think they saw Charlotte as a ripe market, especially with the absence of having any other professional women's sports here. So I think they really looked at it like if you were going to cherry pick a market, Charlotte is probably the perfect one to look at.
And this is a women's team in a women's league, and we have 25% female ownership of the Carolina Ascend, with a, I think the goal is for them to ultimately take majority ownership of this team. It's called the group of women investors call themselves Empower Her Fund LLC. Is there a timeline for them to achieve majority ownership?
So I think that's a great question. I don't think there is an exact answer. I think it is a goal in the future. I think that Dan and Jim are looking at this from a quite of a legacy standpoint. So I think they are going to probably continue to evaluate the team needs, the team vision, make sure everything has solid footing. I think the Empower Her Fund is going to continue to look at new investors. I think they are going to continue to grow, and I think it will be a very organic process over time. Now, what that timeline is, I have no idea, and I don't think if you ask the Empower Her Fund or Jim or Dan, I don't think they would say it's going to be this amount of time. I think it's when the time is right. When the foundation is built, when the team and the league have solidified more of the future, and I think all parties will know when the time is right.
Eric, you're the Business Journal guy here. Who are these women investors? Are they ordinary people? Are they several wealthy, well-heeled individuals? Are they open to other women who are not well-heeled, just becoming members of the so-called ownership team at some lower level? How is it working?
Well, it's an impressive group, and I interviewed them collectively right before the season started, and it was really fun to sit in a room and hear all the perspectives. One of the best known investors is Andrea Smith. She's a former Bank of America executive who's now the interim CEO of the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance. But you have people from all walks. You had Lucia Zapata Griffith, whose family has an architectural and design firm. You have people who had been involved in the schools, banking. The managing partner, Marianne Bruce, has a long financial services history, and her daughter just happens to have be on the team and have scored the first goal in team history. So it's a really interesting mix of people, and I think that the overwhelming thing that came out of that, and that you'll see the rest of the season, is just the pride of investing in a women's professional team and having all the opportunity not just to influence the players, but the organization around those players and build a larger leadership structure that includes women, that is more diverse. And some of that is happening in sports, but certainly those things happen a lot faster when you have some say in the ultimate decision, which is what they have.
Ashley, in your reporting on this, you say, quote, "The goal from the beginning was to have a women-controlled ownership group, but they didn't want to let the opportunity for landing a franchise to pass them by." So in 30 seconds or less, is that to say that the opportunity for this team arose suddenly, but they weren't quite ready financially to take a major ownership step in this, or that the independent owner stepped into the breach to make it happen? What's the story here in 30 seconds?
In 30 seconds, I'd say the latter. They saw the opportunity, the league presented the opportunity, and while they didn't have the Empower Her Fund LLC there just yet, now they do, and eventually you'll have a female majority-owned sport here in Charlotte.
Lots to talk about, including what this means for to have a majority-owned team or even a minority female-owned women's sports team in Charlotte or anywhere else on the planet for that matter. We'll talk about that and more when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Carolina Ascent FC. If you don't know what they are a women's soccer league that played their first game in front of a sellout crowd, I think about 19 days ago in Memorial Stadium, and won the game. It's rare when Charlotte wins a game, so this is a landmark moment in time. We're here with Jan Ivey. She's the Senior VP of Organizational Advancement for the team. Ashley Mahoney is with us, a reporter for Axios Charlotte, and Eric Spanberg, Managing Editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Eric, we're watching, as you have pointed out, the rise in women's sports and interest in it and accomplishment in it at various different levels and in various different athletic pursuits. What would having a majority interest ownership by women in a pro soccer team mean for women's sports in general and for soccer in particular? And what does it say about where these teams and this sport and women's participation in them is heading?
Well, I think it is becoming, it is something that is going to grow as a trend. We have not seen a ton of it. There is some, for example, in the WNBA, the Seattle Storm have a female ownership group. There is a soccer team in the NWSL that has extensive female investor group, including Natalie Portman, the actress, and athletes. And then you have some famous athletes like Serena Williams, who has invested in the Miami Dolphins. So you see it here and there, but this idea of majority ownership among women is still rare. It certainly sends an important message, but it also, for leagues and teams, let's think about this. It opens up another avenue of prospective investors. Who doesn't want that if they're in business? So I think all of those things will come into play. I think what's interesting is, as far as I know, and Jan, correct me, I don't think there are any other female investment groups in the USL Super League yet. So this is certainly setting the pace, if you will, in the USL Super League. But I think we'll see more of it, not only in this league, but across sports.
Ashley.
If I may, there are other female owners in USL Super League to this extent.
Thank
you. in the sense of organization, not quite, but Spokane has female owners, DC Power, Angel Reese, you know, WNBA star. She is part of DC Power's ownership. Lexington has female owners. Dallas has female owners. So to this extent, perhaps not, but there are sprinkled about. And I think we've seen that a lot of you have, you know, here and there, you have maybe a woman here, a woman there. So they're there. They're just not there in numbers yet. But the thing that I'm very curious about is, as we continue to see more and more female teams, more and more female leagues spread across the country, you know, something that Andrea Smith and Marion Bruce shared with me is that you'll see more women get involved in women's teams because the barrier to entry is lower, meaning that you don't need David Tepper kind of money to be an owner in this team. Now, you might not be the majority owner, but you can have a stake in the team. So you'll see more and more women getting in on the act.
And the path has been set. We all know Rebecca Welton, who owns AFC Richmond in the television show Ted Lasso. She's a female owner, and obviously they went to the championship and won in the series, at least. And one fan, Ashley, calls this team a role model for people that play soccer, especially girls, a role model that they can look up to. And as we see interest in women's sports increasing, as we see participation in women's sports increasing, as we see professional women's teams taking fields in various different and courts in various different sports, is this kind of like a snowball rolling down the hill, or will it hit a plateau at some point? What do you think, Ashley?
Well, based on the number of, you know, purely just men's soccer teams that you have in England, I think that there's ample room to grow. I mean, just because we have, you know, USL Super League here in the United States and NWSL and, you know, smaller, you know, kind of more development programs for women, even if you just look at the men's game here, there's so much room for expansion in women's soccer. And if you were there on the 17th, if you were there that night, you know, typically if you go to a Charlotte FC match, they're a great party. There's so much energy. It's an electric atmosphere. But the biggest thing that I noticed about the Ascents match, you know, gosh, we're already into September, but on August 17th, was how many little girls I saw there. And just the pure joy on their faces. And it's the biggest thing, whether it doesn't matter if you know, it's a young girl seeing a woman do something or a young child of color seeing someone else do something. If you see someone who looks like you, that is incredibly impactful and a huge message of, hey, you can do this too. You have a seat at the table. And I'm speaking a little bit to my 7-year-old self who remembers watching the 99ers play in the Women's World Cup. That was a huge turning point for women's soccer in this country. Now we're seeing this not just for women's soccer, but like you mentioned, WNBA, women's sports as a whole.
Well, yes, and it's been rising, and probably on a line up the graph, just like an XY axis, straight up on a 90 degree, what is it, a 45-degree angle? I think. What's behind this, Jan? Is it pent up demand for women who have been held back for years, who wanted to play but couldn't play because the opportunities weren't there for them to play? What's behind the, and also the fan interest? What's behind the fan interest?
So I do think it has a lot to do with young girls growing into young women, growing into the Andrea Smiths and the Marianne Bruces, because I think over time they, you know, when they grew up, when I grew up, those opportunities weren't there. With Title IX, things changed. Women's sports has continued to evolve, but this is a whole different plateau because, you know, young girls are out on the recreational soccer fields playing, you know, every Saturday, and parents like Eric, I know, has had, you know, young daughters in soccer, and you're traveling and you're playing events and you're going match to match to match to match. And these young impressionable females that are on the field, unfortunately, they haven't been able to, you know, necessarily reach out and touch a local team, especially here in Charlotte. Now, you can look on TV, you can watch the women's national team, you can go to a match at the NWSL, whatnot. But here in Charlotte, it's a very homegrown grassroots type of family affair. And I think that's what Ashley and I saw on the 17th was it was family oriented, with a lot of young girls wearing their soccer uniforms to the games, which is chilling. I mean, it's just so much fun to watch.
I know that Eric wants to get in here, and I'll let you in a second, Eric, but I want to follow up on something with Jan here, because this is a professional team, which
Correct.
Means it's a money-making enterprise for which profits are probably going to be in demand at some point. And I know there's a timeline for when that might happen, but what's the benchmark for success?
Right. So the, you know, the anticipation, our, you know, internally, when we are talking about what does success look like, we're filling the stadium, we're selling sponsorships. It's a financially growing opportunity. So that's not going to happen overnight. You know, our anticipation, we would love to, you know, put, you know, 4,500 to 5,500 in the stadium each night. There's little expectation for a sellout every game. We have 14 games in our season, 7 in the fall and 7 in the spring, as Ashley had mentioned earlier, because we work on that global schedule. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. It's not like it's an automatic, you know, shutout every night that we're going to do this. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of strategy. It takes PR. It takes media buys. It takes people hitting the bricks, trying to sell tickets. We're old fashioned from that perspective, while we're trying to use technology to help us to those goals.
So Eric, I'm going to give you a shot to chime in on what you were going to talk about before I ask that question or whatever.
Two quick thoughts. First of all, shame on me. Thanks to Ashley for saving my errant answer on the female investors, particularly because Angel Reese played at LSU, and I'm an LSU alum, so shame on me. But the larger point, when you're talking about role models, as Ashley and Jan were, one of the things that really struck me is when the Ascent had their media day, which is where the reporters go and talk to the coaches and the players. When we asked the players, Ashley was there that day, when we asked the players about what it means to be a professional team in Charlotte and in this region, the emotion and joy that they showed as they recounted going to events, jersey unveiling and those kinds of things, and the way that young girls respond to them and the way they kind of cling to them and just gather around really shows you the power of what this can be if the Ascent
Think
keeps moving in this direction.
Okay, you just froze for a second there, Eric. Speaking of moving in a direction, you were there. I know Ashley was at that opening day game. Were you there as well?
I was not there. I was not
okay.
there.
Okay. Well, they had 10,553 fans in the stands at Memorial Stadium for the first match. It was the first match, so there's probably a lot of curiosity there and excitement there and a willingness to be out there just to support this new venture coming to town. But can they keep it up, or is Charlotte at risk of becoming oversaturated? We now have three soccer teams.
If I may. So well, go ahead, Charlotte, sure. I think... Charlotte, you will always have that person in Charlotte who says, I'm bored. There's nothing to do in Charlotte. And every single time I look at them and I say, well, hey, Axios publishes a weekday planner and a weekender every single week, and it is packed with stuff to do. How the heck can you be bored in this town? There's so much to do. This isn't the snoozy uptown, you know, goes, you know, dark at 5 p.m. when all the bankers leave, you know, from the days of old. This is a vibrant community with so much to offer. So can they continue to sell out? Like Jan said, you know, maybe not to that degree. If winning is definitely going to help, the fact that they're undefeated is, you know, a nice bonus. They've got a home match this coming Friday. Whether or not they continue to draw in the same type of people who came in, we'll see. The weather is going to get nice. It's going to get cool. It's going to get crisp. It's a perfect night for, you know, a beautiful skyline view and some quality soccer. That's one thing that I can credit their head coach, Philip Poole, with, is he's going to put a quality product on the pitch. But is Charlotte oversaturated with soccer? No, you have the Independents. You have Charlotte FC, you know, their third division minor league affiliate in MLS Next Pro. They play out in Matthews. You have a number of smaller kind of grassroots teams here as well. You have history with the Charlotte Eagles, who are now two development teams for both men and women. And as the soccer junkie in the room, you can never have too much soccer. There's no way we could be oversaturated with this.
I should point out that they're undefeated because they won their very first game. They tied the second, and the third was canceled because the home team, I think in Brooklyn, had a problem with their field, which I'll talk about a little bit later. The Charlotte Independents, Eric, achieved their league's championship, if I'm not mistaken. But they only attracted 1,500 fans per game in that same stadium, Memorial Stadium, which seats over 10,000. So is that because we have Charlotte FC in town and they are playing at a higher level league with higher level players? And can the Charlotte Ascent beat the Independents in terms of attendance because of just the natural curiosity of this being something new and different and women players?
Well, I think there are several things at play there. The first is you touched on, it's always going to be hard for the men's team, the Independents, because they're in a lower tier and they're, three, four blocks away from a major league soccer team in Charlotte FC. And there's so much excitement, as Ashley mentioned, it has become a thing to do. Right. They have been second in attendance in the league now in their third year. They've done really, really well. And they've done a lot of things really well to make that success happen. So I think it's going to be a bit of a slog for them. I think with Carolina Ascent, I think it is different. And as you're talking about whether there's too much soccer or not, beyond the soccer fan, there's the women's sports fan, which, as Jan said, has not been served in Charlotte since the WNBA Sting. Charlotte Sting left in 2007. And when Charlotte had the WNBA, it was not today's WNBA. I mean, it was really an afterthought. They didn't draw well. They didn't get a lot of media coverage or attention. And that is a huge part of the mix of women's sports, as we're talking about all the great athletes and all the interest. You have to have media coverage, both locally and nationally. That's something else that started to change. So I think there is plenty of room for the Ascent because of that differentiating factor of they're bringing women's professional sports back, and they're the first to do it. I'm sure this will not be the last women's professional sports team we have in town, but the Ascent are the first to come back, and so that's going to be an advantage going forward.
The timing is everything, and perhaps the timing for our WNBA team was not right. Perhaps it would be today. We'll put that little tickler out there for people who have deep pockets and want to bring a team to town. Jan, you set a record for attendance in your very first game. We've talked a little bit about whether or not that was a surprise, But can you maintain anything close to that, do you think? Was that a fluke? Will it be matched again? I mean, particularly if they continue to win?
Well, I think winning certainly helps, right? Winning fixes a lot of things. It gets you more media attention, to Eric's point. It gets you an engaged fan. Not many fans, and we have teams here locally we could point fingers at, but we won't. But, you know, fans like to win. So I do think as long as we have a quality product on the field and we have a very determined coach and front office staff, we will continue to win on and off the pitch. Now it's, you know, to your, you know, comment, Eric, it takes a lot of, it takes a lot of work, right? This is not a fluke. This is not something that was like, we just turned on the lights and everybody showed up. This was quite a bit of time to work on, you know, trying to make sure that opening night was a success, but it was a success for our team, for our fans, for Charlotte, you know, for everyone. So yeah, it's going to maintain a lot of work to keep those attendance there, but winning obviously helps.
Well, fans like to win, players like to win, coaches like to win, but you know who really likes to win? The ownership group likes to win, because that translates to profits. And I'm told that they're looking to be profitable within 5 years, but the Charlotte Independence hasn't broken even and may not turn a profit. So in 30 seconds, well, you can have a little more time than that, Jan. Why are they so optimistic about profits for this team in 5 years?
I think it's a combination of all the things that we've already talked about. It is the Charlotte market. It is the fans that are moving to Charlotte that they, you know, those 217 people a day, those people command entertainment, and they command entertainment from a lot of different levels. So I think for us, the Independence and the Ascent, I think we are going to continue to attract fans for a lot of different reasons. We're a very affordable product. We have an easy stadium to get in and out of. We have on-site parking. It's just, it's a very friendly atmosphere.
I want to talk about ticket prices. I want to talk about the talent, the actual players who are on this team, and the tier that this team is playing in and what that means, because there's so many tiers, I can't keep them straight. And I don't want to shed any here, so we'll get some straight answers when we come back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Carolina Ascent and their ascent in the world of women's soccer, women's sports in general. It's the new team in town. They played their first game August 17th at Memorial Stadium. The next one is coming up, I believe, tomorrow, Friday. Jan Ivey is here. She's Senior Vice President for Organizational Advancement for Carolina Ascent FC. Ashley Mahoney, a reporter for Axios Charlotte, our go-to person when it comes to soccer. And Eric Spanberg, also another go-to person when it comes to, well, everything. Managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Ashley, I said that Carolina Ascent is Charlotte's first top-tier professional women's soccer team. What does that mean, top tier?
So imagine a pyramid, and at the very top is your first division, if you will. So if this helps to think about it in college terms, you have Division One, Division Two, et cetera. So NWSL and US, I say this, I'm talking with my hands, which is very helpful for people on the radio. If you're watching the stream of this, that helps. But you have NWSL and USL Super League. They coexist in Division One. So you have two of the highest level of women's teams who can play, you know, in this country. That's their level. If you want to dive back into Charlotte history, once upon a time, Charlotte Eagles were a lower level professional women's soccer team here, never top tier. So this is, and yes, this is correct. This is the very first time that Charlotte's ever had top tier, Division One, whatever you prefer to call it. But the fun part about that is you have a number of players, you know, your Vicky Bruce, and a number of other players who grew up in the area who played with that itineration of the Charlotte Eagles. So it all comes full circle.
So are you saying top tier within the women's leagues or top tier in soccer in general? Because I understand that the Carolina Ascent, which has played exactly two games, is in a higher tier than the Charlotte Independence is. Correct.
Yes. So if you were to look at, so this is the women's pyramid and the men's pyramid. So if you put them side by side, Charlotte FC is in the top pyramid, the top little bracket, if you will, for the men's game. And then second division is where the Charlotte Independents used to play. That's called USL Championship. And then you have USL League One, which is where they currently play. So that's your third bracket or third division, if you will, or third tier. And then you move down into more developmental leagues, more further down the pyramid. The pyramid gets a lot larger and more spread out and a little bit more confusing, if you will, the further down you go. But very top MLS, USL Championship, and then USL League One, et cetera. Well, technically, you can also look at MLS Next Pro is also in that USL League One adjacent pyramid. And then you have the women's pyramid, which is much smaller and hopefully will fill out the same way that the men's pyramid has.
Jan, obviously to build interest, you have to have this touchy-feely thing where fans come out and see the players, maybe even get to interact with these players because they're not NFL players that are untouchable out there on the field in some cases. And I know that one of the goals or one of the strategies to build interest is, and building attendance, which is the key to that, is keeping tickets affordable. It's kind of the minor league baseball approach to building interest. But single game tickets for the Carolina Ascent are priced at $24 to $120, with season tickets ranging from just under $200 to nearly $1,000. I have to ask, is that affordable?
Well, we think if you look at the other Charlotte market entertainment options, yes, it is. I mean, you can walk up, a family of four can walk up, buy a ticket, come in the stadium, have some hot dogs and, you know, a nice soft drink beverage, and then look at what they've spent here. And they could probably, one person probably could have gone to another sports, you know, team event and spent that much money. So we feel like we are very affordable, and we have on-site parking. We have the availability for, we have multiple things for families to do when they get here. It's not just the soccer game. We try to add in, some entertainment pieces for the young ones who may not even know what soccer is all about yet.
Eric, as Ashley pointed out, sometimes people complain that there's nothing to do, when in fact there's a heck of a lot to do. You just got to seek it out and know where it is. And this is another thing that has come online. And I'm curious about how much expendable income there is, because the Blumenthal mounts countless Broadway shows at various different series, for which there are season tickets for individual series, and have comedy shows and have music shows. And then you have the Panthers and the Hornets and Charlotte FC and the Charlotte Independents and now Carolina Ascent, and there are other teams. Is there enough expendable income in Charlotte to go around to support all of these different opportunities?
I think there's enough to support most of them. I mean, you're going to have winners and losers. Things will fall away or they will begin to diminish. But Mike, when you look at, I think Jan mentioned the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance statistic from earlier this week, 117 people a day are moving into the Charlotte area. And as that study found, most of them have college degrees and are professionals. And so they have disposable income. And look, we haven't even gone through all the soccer. There was the Copa America that we talked about earlier. There were 70,000 people that filled that stadium. So yeah, I think there is a big appetite and there are a lot of people that are looking for things to do.
So Abby tweets, just wanted to chime in as an Ascent season ticket holder, just how excited I am to have this team in town. The matches are fun and thrilling and you get such a great view of the action. I wonder I really want this team and the league to be successful for a long time. And Jan, the USL Super League website says Carolina Ascent is bringing a new generation of talent to the Carolinas, and they go on to list some of the players, one of whom is 17 years old. So where do you find the players? Where is this league finding the players for these teams?
Well, I think it has, like Ashley has talked about in the lower division play, the recreational division play, the developmental leagues. I think we are, our coach Poole is very dedicated to looking at local talent. Like, he really wants to promote and elevate local homegrown talent. And, you know, from that perspective, that's I think that's probably the first place he looks. And then if he can fill a gap, then that's what he does. And then if he can't, then he continues to look outward. But as Eric said, our players, our coaches, the technical staff, they're all very, very focused on our fans. They're very focused about community. They're very, I mean, it's very organic when you are around our players. Smiles are infectious. I will just say, every time I'm around our team, they're ear-to-ear smiles. I don't care if it's a practice day, media day, autograph signing session. They are so thrilled to be here, to have that uniform on, and to represent our team and our city.
Ashley, she mentioned that the one of the focuses is to bring in local talent, and the team does have two local folks on it. Vicky Bruce, a Davidson alumna from, I think, Cornelius, who was the first player to sign with this team and the first player to score a goal for this team. I guess her name will be on the plaque, or they'll put a statue up at the entrance to the stadium at some point in her future. But talk about her, and talk about Cannon Clough, who is also a local player, Ashley.
Yeah. So Cannon is a Charlotte Latin alumna, and she had the good fortune to go see her big brother win silver in the Paralympics. So if you are a Charlotte coffee drinker, or you just enjoy a really good empanada, and you've been to Giddy Goat over in Plaza Midwood, Carson Club, that name might sound familiar. He's the co-founder of Giddy Goat. So it was a very busy month for the Clough family. Cannon obviously was part of a historic moment here in Charlotte, and you had her big brother who made history in his first Paralympics and took home a medal. So very busy time for the Clough family. But Cannon is, again, you know, she's part of the Charlotte fabric. You know, she's a Charlotte kid who grew up here, who was one of the kids who played with the Eagles along with Vicky and along with Ashlyn. Ashlyn, I apologize, I'm going to butcher your last name. But Jan, if you want to correct me on how to say Ashlyn's last name, I would very much appreciate that assist.
Well, I was probably going to murder it worse than you, but she's lovely. Serpica?
Yes.
She's going to say that, and I'm sorry, Ashlyn, if I killed it.
Exactly. It's the beautiful thing about being able to write names and not having to necessarily say them on the radio all the time.
Let me ask you about this. So there are eight teams, and there's some, like, how many players on a team? 26, something like that? So you got 8 times 26. Those are all people who are coming into professional athletics. Are these young women people who ever thought they would be able to play on a professional level? Is this a surprise to them? Is this like a gift from the heavens for them?
I think a number of them, you look at Vicky, Cannon, a number of these other players, they've been playing professionally. It just hasn't been here in the United States. Okay. You know, a lot of them, they've played in Australia, they've played overseas. And you know, with that comes the task of sometimes you have to work multiple jobs because women's sports, like you alluded to, Mike, it's still seen as this, oh, honey, how lucky you get to play a sport. And it shouldn't be that. This is a career. This is a profession. No one's looking at LaMelo Ball, who's constantly injured, and saying that about him. He's making millions. So why do we still treat women this way?
I have to ask then about compensation, because obviously women, one of the things that we've been watching around the world is that as women's sports are in ascendance, they want equal compensation with the men. Maybe that's not the case here because it's a fledgling league and the fledgling team, but at some point, I would seem to me, if they do really well, they'd probably like to be equally compensated. What do these young women make, Jan?
So it's like any organization and any company. You have entry level, and you have your top tier, top of the, top of the food chain type of players. So I would say, entry is going to be, around the 40 range, and then it goes up into the 120, 130, range for your top players. But success will float all boats. So as we sell more tickets and as we sell more sponsorships, as the league continues to grow, obviously this is an area that will continue to grow as well.
And this is all economics, or I like to call it soccernomics. There are now eight teams in this league, coming from cities ranging from Washington, D.C. to Brooklyn, New York, Spokane, Washington, Tampa Bay, our city, Fort Lauderdale, and then Lexington, South Carolina. Now I'm
Kentucky.
wondering, oh,
Kentucky.
excuse me, Kentucky. Really? I wonder why I
Kentucky.
typed South
Sporting club.
Carolina. Okay, well
Because
then.
it's Lexington sport club or sporting
Okay.
club.
Yeah. Well,
So it I
that negates my question, because I was going
Yeah.
to ask how could they possibly compete, but that negates my question there. So I won't ask it. Eric reported in the Business Journal that team owners were targeting an average attendance, and I think you've talked about this, Jan, of about 6,000, 5 to 6,000 people per match this opening inaugural season. You're playing 28 matches, 14 on the road, 14 at home from now through next June. How did you arrive at that magic number of 5 or 6,000?
So it's all numbers, right? It's all in order to look at the club from a financially successful level, and to the point you've made earlier, how do we become profitable, in the future? And it is it's a methodology that is based on turnstile. It's based on sponsorship. It's based on once we get TV deals put into place, merchandise. It's not a one slice of a pizza pie. It is the whole pizza. So we look at all of that as to how do we reach our goals for success.
And one of your jobs is to sell these games, to get people into the seats, into the stands. How do you do that? I mean, obviously you mentioned television commercials and everything, but is it more than that? Is it more than just marketing outside the stadium? Is it also creating some sort of atmosphere inside the stadium that is unique or special or so exciting that I want to come back?
So we say that, we are obviously a soccer club. Obviously, it's highly dependent on, what's going on the pitch. But actually, Mike, what we are selling is fun, right? At the end of the day, people want to come out, they want to leave their life at home or in the car or whatever. So when we have the privilege to host them inside the stadium, we want to sell them fun. We want them to have such a great time, regardless of what's going on the pitch. And don't tell Coach Poole I said that, but we want to provide,
Well,
multifaceted fun opportunities. I mean, right down to the hot dog G. You just want it to be fun and enjoyable.
and I sometimes wonder, particularly with Charlotte FC, if people go to see the game or they just go to imbibe and chat
It's
and do all the
social.
cheers and stuff like that. Actually, compare, since you went to the opening game for Charlotte Ascent, compare the atmosphere to that of a Charlotte FC football game,
Oh
soccer
gosh, I
game.
was at the home opener for the Independents many moons ago, the home opener for Charlotte FC and the home opener for now the Ascent. And I have to say, specifically focusing on the latter two, both have a place in this city. They're very different experiences. Both are electric in their own way, but I think Charlotte is hungry for more. And I think if, young Ashley many years ago could have seen either, she would have been over the moon, because there are so many people who are going to travel for this. It might not necessarily be plane ticket travel yet. That, like what Eric mentioned with Copa and what that brought in, or what Real Madrid and Chelsea drew last month. But people are excited about this. I think that if you haven't been to one, give it a shot. I've been harassing a dear friend, and every single time I see him, I'm like, have you been to a Charlotte FC match yet? And now we get to also ask, have you been to a Carolina Ascent match yet? And just try it.
I also want to make it clear that this team has already achieved something else no other Charlotte team has achieved, and that is, I think, you're number one in the league. Is that correct? I mean, it's a young season and a young league.
That is factual.
We're the top team in the country in this league. Enjoy it. Jan Ivey, Senior Vice President of Organizational Advancement for Carolina Ascent FC, Ashley Mahoney, reporter for Axios Charlotte, and Eric Spanberg, Managing Editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.